Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We will try to be positive this week. If you are tuning in or checking us out on the internet, as we try to stabilize our website, we've expanded our social media and all sorts of things for the election this week. You'll hear all sorts of things, including former Governor O'Malley and current Congressman John Sarbanes, amongst many, many others. You can find all of that out at Baltimore Positive. What you will not find at Baltimore Positive is a positive result after Sunday's game. Luke Jones joins us now, and we're going to talk all week long about what a week this is for an old fart like me, Luke, right? Pittsburgh and then Indianapolis. At least the Patriots look like they suck, so we got that going on before the month is over with no Tom Brady there. But brother, you and I have been on a lot of trips up over the mountain to Yinzanat, Danton, and Breezewood, and walking across the bridge. There's been some happy nights, some sad nights. This is one of the weird ones where, like, we're not together watching the game. You were at the game, I was watching on TV. I don't like losing to the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, I don't even want to talk about it. You know what I mean? Like, seriously, I don't even want to talk about it. But we lost, and it was not, what we're going to be debating is how good they are and what they're, the only thing that matters is how they're going to play in January once they get there. I'm convinced they're going to get there. But this was disconcerting. This is a little bit of a gut punch. There'll be a 24-hour rule on this one, but I'm unhappy about this one. I would call you and bitch on Monday morning about how I felt about Sunday. So there.
Yeah. I don't know how you can be happy about it. I mean, certainly you can look at the fact that they ran the ball down Pittsburgh's throats, and they had been an excellent run defense. So maybe you try to put a positive spin, and J.K. Dobbins goes over 100 yards, and they ran the ball so well. But they lost. Despite the fact that they dominated statistically, you see how Lamar Jackson plays, and we'll talk about Lamar plenty, but let's look at the big picture loss of the franchise left tackle that you just gave a $100 million contract to on Friday. Has his ankle crushed and is gone for the year. And yes, Orlando Brown and John Harbaugh and other members of the offensive line will talk about next man up and all of that. If it's not a big deal, why did you give Ronnie Stanley $100 million? It is a big deal. The Ravens know it's a big deal. So
I stood up when he went down, and I just started to heat some food. Do you really want to know that I went to Pizza John's? I was at Pizza John's at 11 a.m. on Sunday. Very, very rare for a game day. We ordered ahead, We stopped out, saw Rob Santoni, Wise Marks. We were just making our way around town, I had an apple cider donut. I'm like, if Luke's going to get a box lunch and I'm going to miss a Steelers game, I'm at least going to have a Pizza John's sub. And I deconstructed and I heated the oven up. And it was right around the time he went down. And I got up and I said to my wife, I'm like, they're not going to win a Super Bowl without Ronnie Stanley. You know what I mean? Like, that was the first thing I said. I didn't tweet it. I'm only going to say it to you now because I've had a couple of hours to decompress and think about it. But I do want to admit that that was my first thought. My first thought was they can win the game without Matt Judon, right? But they can't win the Super Bowl without Ronnie Stanley and without Marshall Yanda. That's a different football team than the 14-2 outfit that we saw push everybody around last year.
Well, I mean, I'd say this. To speak of that as an absolute, Lamar Jackson's truly the only one that goes down and you say the season's over.
Okay, fair.
Let's make that clear. However, there's no birthright here. It's not as though it was the Ravens' destiny going into the season that, because they went 14-2 last year and they were the best team in the regular season, and yes, they stubbed their toe against Tennessee, they're going to come out and they're going to win the Super Bowl. So we understand that. This is one of the most devastating losses on your roster that you can endure. And I'm not going to sit here and say they cannot win a Super Bowl without Ronnie Stanley, but it makes it that much more difficult because of what you just said. We've already been lamenting the loss of Marshall Yanda and the impact that that's had on their interior offensive line. So can you overcome that? Yes, you can. Will they? That's going to be the big question. And look, I think Orlando Brown Jr. can play a capable left tackle, capable is quite a far cry from all pro left tackle, a guy that you just paid.
Nobody would be wanting to give Orlando Brown $100 million to be their left tackle, right?
Correct. So when you do look at it in the aggregate, you know, looking at all this from a cumulative standpoint and some of the issues we were talking about during the bye week and coming out and facing Pittsburgh and already, you know, talking about Kansas City, yes, that regular season matchup's in the rearview mirror, but the bar was raised. I mean, when you go 14-2 and you don't get the job done last year, we said it all along, it's Super Bowl or bust. So from that, looking at it through that lens, this is a major loss. I mean, stating the obvious, like I said, if it's not, then why'd you pay him $100 million? So the Ravens made very clear how important Ronnie Stanley is to them. So you can look at it and say, well, they ran the ball really well, and that's great, and that's good, and that's certainly a positive, and I love what I saw from J.K. Dobbins on Sunday. But when you're looking at the offensive side of the ball, other than the quarterback, reigning MVP quarterback, and that's stating the obvious, among their offensive players that you could least afford to lose, it's Ronnie Stanley. You know, you could talk about Mark Andrews. Maybe you'd talk about Marquise Brown, although – one catch, a touchdown, and he was chirping about it on Twitter in a tweet that he has since deleted. But he's your franchise left tackle. And the Ravens, we know they searched long and hard, and they went through some other guys, even a guy like Eugene Monroe that they paid. And you know, they had mixed results at best at that position from the time that Jonathan Ogden retired, early in the summer of 2008. So
yeah, it always turns out best when you pick your left tackle in the top 10.
Yeah.
The problem is, in order to pick your left tackle in the top 10, you probably have had a pretty leaky offensive line.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they went through a lot of pain in 2015 to be in that position.
So did Joe Flacco in his rehab.
Sure. So to try to sit here and be dismissive of it or to say that they can overcome that, I think they can. There have certainly been teams that have lost their starting left tackle and can win a Super Bowl. But, boy, it becomes that much more difficult when you're already talking about your interior offensive line being shaky. You're already talking about your passing game not being as efficient as it was last year. And this is where we bring it back to Lamar Jackson, who I think to this point in the season, Nestor, some of the criticism of him had been a little unfair, a little over the top. Was he playing at an MVP level? No. Do I think he was still playing at a very solid top 10 quarterback level? Yes. Especially when you take into account what he does with his legs and what he has still been able to do up until Sunday, had only thrown two interceptions. But when you see how Sunday's game played out, and we can talk about, you know, Pittsburgh making some adjustments and having some success in the second half offensively when they did nothing offensively. You can talk about some calls here or there. You can talk about the Judon ejection. You can talk about Ronnie Stanley's injury. But it's very simple. You can't have your quarterback throw a pick six on your opening drive. You can't have your quarterback hold the ball too long when you're, you know, in scoring range, and you know that a Justin Tucker field goal is at the very least, that's in the bank. And then there's a strip sack because he holds the ball too long. And then you can't have your quarterback throw a pick on your opening drive of the second half. And that sets up Pittsburgh in the red zone, and they score a touchdown right away. So
and they were filthy interceptions too. They weren't purpose passes. They weren't threading
they were
a
bad.
Needle down the field where like there was a big play. They were just really bad passes.
Head scratches, right.
And he's had a month of, you know, not throwing the ball well. And
sure.
And for me on Sunday, the wetness of the ball, and Romo talked about it again. I know you weren't listening to the game, and I was. You were having a box lunch. You know, Romo talked about the wetness of the ball, and I saw it with Roethlisberger, too. We saw it with receivers. I mean, the ball was wet, and if anybody's ever touched an NFL football that's been wet, and I've been down on the sidelines over the course of years to get the slickery of it, it's bigger than you think. It's wetter than you think. It's harder and slipperier than you think, all of that, right? And you see it flop around, but you know, he hasn't thrown the ball well. Rain or no rain, he hasn't thrown the ball well.
Those were clearly two plays that he wants back. I mean, he didn't slip out of his hand, anything like that. They were bad reads, and clearly, I mean, the second one, he even admitted in post game, he thought that the defender was covering Patrick Ricard in the flat. And of course he drops back and then makes a really nice play. I mean, two really nice plays, give Pittsburgh credit on those plays, but bad interceptions. So,
well, the reason they're 14-2 is he's never thrown those, but he's never put them on the 18-yard line. That just never happens. I mean, you almost get to the point where you think it's not possible, because it's like him fumbling for as much as, moving the ball around and sleight of hand and all that we talked about in all these off seasons, that they have played some sort of weirdly flawless robo brand of football last year that you and I, we marveled at, we talked about, and we talked about it in marvelous terms or marvelous terms. And then they come back down to earth and there's just a couple of clunkers and you still almost win, right? Yeah. I mean, so it's not like they got hammered or anything like that. But, that is the difference between being flawless, which is being the MVP of the league, which is being Tom Brady, which is being Peyton Manning, which is being elite, dare I say, and stinking against your division rival and having never really won a big football game. And no one really thinks that you can come back from 10 points down with 4 minutes left to go, that they don't think you're that kind of offense. I mean, all of the above, that there's all of that waiting to be checked off for him. And it can only get checked off when you're losing to Pittsburgh late, right? Not when you're ahead by 3 touchdowns against anybody, even against Pittsburgh. But this was particularly, you're starting to feel the mojo of, well, how good can they be? How good are they? And then there's Ronnie Stanley on top of that.
No question about it. And for all of the other challenges that are facing their offense right now, you can't have a version of Lamar Jackson that you had on Sunday. And look, let's be very clear. Lamar made a lot of great plays in that game as well. It's not as though he was terrible from start to finish. I mean, we've seen some really poor quarterback performances in the history of this franchise, especially go back to the first half of the history of this franchise. But when you are dealing with some of the challenges they've had, and this goes for just about every team, as much as I really try to avoid, as I do this more and more, and I try to hold myself to a high standard in trying to break down games. And look, I'm not Bill Belichick. I'm not John Harbaugh. I'm not a football X's and O's expert. I'm not going to try to be. But one of the cliches you hear about all the time is what? Win the turnover battle, which is the Captain Obvious statement every week. I mean, analytics will show you that the team that wins the turnover battle wins 78 to 80% of the time. So it's kind of a given. You just say that every week. It'd be like saying the key of the game is to score more points than the opponent. Well, no duh. I mean, but when you look at this game, you look at the stat breakdown. I mean, they had 457 yards of offense. They ran the ball all over a really, really good run defense. They completely controlled the game from a play-to-play standpoint. But, and this even goes back to what happened to them against Tennessee in the playoff game, it's those win probability swings when you turn the ball over. You give up a big play. Those types of plays just absolutely kill you. And, I mean, Lamar Jackson, for all of the good that he did at various times during the game, those turnovers, those three turnovers specifically, the other lost fumble was on a fourth down.
Statistically,
there.
It's crazy. You can be, 5 of 7 on fourth down, but if the one you miss is the one when it's 4th and 1 on the 6-yard line and you have to make it to win the game, then, statistics don't matter at all.
Right, exactly. I mean, you can't have those plays happen. I mean, we talked about this with the Tennessee game. I mean, that game came down to 5 or 6 different plays in January, but they become the 5 or 6 most important plays in the football game. We've talked about some other games earlier this year where, look at the Washington game. We talked about that first half where the Ravens made 4 or 5 critical, huge plays in that first half. And that turned a game that otherwise might have been fairly close into a game that they had a comfortable lead then in the second half. So this was the opposite of that. I mean, the Ravens, they dominated statistically, but you turn the ball over 4 times, and 3 of those, the other one was going to be a turnover on downs anyway, but those 3 turnovers that directly lead to 14 points for the opposition, an opposition that offensively, especially in that first half, did nothing. I mean, they did absolutely nothing.
Nothing to earn those 14 points.
Right, and then that strip sack where you, at the very least, at worst, you're going to have a Justin Tucker field goal there in the bank, you assume. I mean, look at that. That's 17 points right there. In a game like this, I mean, this was you know, this was a classic Ravens-Steelers game as far as it being close. And from a pure entertainment standpoint, it was everything a football fan would want. But for the Ravens and their fans' perspective, you look at those turnovers and it just absolutely kills you. So, you know, the Ronnie Stanley injury is the really big picture, you know, the really big concern from a big picture standpoint. But, you know, this goes back to Lamar Jackson not being as fine as he'd been. And then some of these other issues now that they've had on offense that are still going to be there, but now you don't have your franchise left tackle. And I mean, that's just so concerning because I think whether you're talking about issues in pass protection, or I think, and we've even talked about this in some other games this year, where even if the pass protection hasn't been that bad, Lamar is feeling it. You know, I won't go as far as a Sam Darnold seeing ghosts thing, you know, last year. I think that would be unfair to Lamar and disrespectful to him because you're talking about a guy who did win an MVP last year. But we've seen examples of him maybe anticipating or feeling the pressure in the pocket or feeling more pressure than is actually there. And, I mean, it really came to a head on Sunday. I mean, as I said, you can point to so many other issues in this game or some other mistakes. I mean, they had penalties again, as we saw against Philadelphia, you know, lining up incorrectly and, you know, illegal motion at one point. So they didn't seem to correct those things during the bye week, which that's disconcerting as well, especially knowing historically how well the Ravens have played coming out of bye weeks under John Harbaugh. But this really comes back to your star quarterback. And it doesn't even have to be a star quarterback, your quarterback. It's the most important position on the field, either side of the ball. He makes critical mistakes, bad mistakes in some really bad situations at, you know, at the wrong time. It's going to cost you the football game unless your quarterback does some insanely heroic things at the end of the game, which Lamar Jackson wasn't able to do then. So going back to the narrative, going back to, you know, what this means in January, Kansas City, quietly now, and this was talked about a little bit over the course of the week. I touched on it a little bit. I know other people in town did as well, but think back to week five last year when the Ravens win in Pittsburgh in overtime. That was arguably Lamar Jackson's worst game of the season. That was his first start against Pittsburgh. He didn't play in week 17. You know, that glorified preseason game, RG3 got the start. Right, great, beautiful. I'm not, you know, it's not a knock on anyone. It's just the way it was. But you follow that with, in my opinion, Nestor, his worst game since the Chargers playoff loss 2 years ago. And, well, you lose. And now you're in a position, you're trailing Kansas City, and now you're trailing Pittsburgh by two games in the division. And, you know, they have the first half of the, you know, I mean, it's not a tiebreaker if the Ravens go to Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving and win, but, you know, you're behind the eight ball a little bit here. They're a rock-solid playoff team at worst. You know, let's be very clear about this. This is not throwing up a red flag that this team's going to go on a tailspin.
And I believe that without Ronnie Stanley, by the
sure,
way, too.
Sure, so, yeah. I totally agree with you there. However, if we're speaking through, again, talking about that lens of what this means in terms of Super Bowl chances and January and knowing how important it is to have home playoff games and knowing that there's only one first-round bye now with the 7-team field in the AFC rather than six, you do look at this game and you look, that's where it hurts so much from a statistical standpoint that you did so many things well, but you just did some really important things poorly. And I mean, it just absolutely kills you in that way. I mean, it really, really, really hurts you from a division standpoint, from a conference standpoint. And I do think this is one of those that, you know, will test your mettle a little bit from a mental standpoint. I mean, you come out of the bye week and you're rested up and Pittsburgh had played, you know, played a tough road game in Nashville last week, and they haven't had a bye, and you're thinking, wow, this sets up really well at home. You've got 4,000 fans in the stands. So, look, it's not 71,000, but it's...
They were quite loud at one point.
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah. I mean, you get a little bit of mojo that way, and then you just have the kind of performance that you do with making some, you know, your franchise MVP quarterback making some really bad plays at some bad times, and it costs you a football game.
Well, and you also wake up on Monday morning with your left tackle with a foot in a boot for sure. The rest of the year.
Sure.
And Judon with his feelings hurt, and, you know, I think there'll probably be an envelope coming from Marcus Peters based on the two headbutts as well. So, you know, there's a lot of really bad taste in your mouth from this one. And you really do find yourself, like, now needing help, right? That now you're at the point where you can go beat them on Thanksgiving, but you better not stub your toe along the way. You need them to stub their toe. They're feeling real good about themselves, right? Steelers, right? Like, sneaking out of town, undefeated, got away with it, you know. And their defense got run all over, and they didn't pay the price.
Yeah, I think that's an excellent point here. I mean, as much as we'll focus on this from the Ravens' perspective, I mean, for Pittsburgh and their psyche and coming off of last year and Roethlisberger coming off the elbow, and look, we talked about it over the summer, but there was very much a lot of unknown there. I mean, you're talking about a quarterback coming off a major elbow surgery. He's in his late 30s. You didn't know what Ben Roethlisberger was going to look like. And make no mistake, I don't think he's anywhere close to where he was 5, 6, 7 years ago.
Dude, if I would have told you August 15th that on my grandmother's birthday, All Saints Day, that we would wake up here in early November, Election Day, and the Steelers would be undefeated and we would have two losses, that there would never be any part of that that would be palatable to me, Luke. And you live in Pennsylvania, and you know, I hope things go well there this week.
I'm sure I'll be getting a message from my pastor, full disclosure, but.
Oh, that's a Steelers fan.
Oh, yeah. He's a big Steelers fan. Yeah. Heard but Ravens being 5-2, that wouldn't have shocked me. Pittsburgh being 7-0. I mean, you have to give them credit. And to your point, the mental lift that they get, and we've talked about this with the Ravens plenty of times over the years. I mean, you know, I can give you 5 or 6 examples right off the top of my head of games where the Ravens had no business winning, you know, even going back to, you know, the early days, you know, where you look at it statistically and, you know, the Tennessee Titans would have more yards than them, but the Ravens would make 1 or 2 big plays, or Al Del Greco misses a field goal, or, you know, they get a block. I mean, look at that playoff game in 2000. I mean, the Ravens have been the benefactor plenty of times, but when it happens to you, what effect that has on you, not just on the standings, but, you know, I would say mentally, you know, I think there's something to that, and the lift that it does give Pittsburgh. And you look at their schedule, not that the Ravens have a particularly difficult schedule the rest of the way either, but, you know, to your point, the margin for error, you know, it's getting smaller. And, oh yeah, they go to Indianapolis next week, and, you know, that's a Colts team that, you know, is playing some pretty solid football. I'm not ready to put them in the AFC elite category by any means, but certainly a game that's not a gimme. And, I mean, you just look at where Kansas City is. You look at where Pittsburgh is now with a 2-game lead in the division, and they're feeling so good about themselves. I mean, it's not getting away from them in the sense of they're in danger of missing the playoffs or anything like that, but in terms of wanting to be the number one seed, there's concerns there. I mean, there has to be. And then you factor in the Ronnie Stanley injury and what that's going to mean for their offensive line. The O-line's been such a topic of discussion all offseason and into the early portion of the season. And, you know, even if you feel okay about Orlando Brown at left tackle being serviceable, is DJ Fluker going to give you week after week a serviceable right tackle? So, you know, it's concerning. It really is. And it's very disappointing because, you know, they certainly, the opportunities were there to win that football game, and you could lose Ronnie Stanley and you come out with the win at the very least, you bank the win and you're tied for first place and you got the first half of the tiebreaker with Pittsburgh, and knowing you got a chance to sweep them on Thanksgiving night, you know, you're feeling much better about it. But now you look at it, you look at how this passing game, you know, as great as it was to see Willie Snead do the things he did, Marquise Brown not happy after the game. You know, Mark Andrews not much of a factor in this game. I mean, we talked about it so many times last year about their ability to just fire on all cylinders offensively, and they just played downhill. And they make no mistake, they ran the ball incredibly well. But, you know, we just haven't seen those 60-minute performances from this offense the way that we did last year over and over and over again. And there really was a sense, and people were drawing so many parallels going into the bye week last year and saying, well, you kind of look at them statistically, you know, they weren't firing on all cylinders. And what happened? They came out of the bye week and New England came to town undefeated. You know, you could see some parallels here, right? I mean, an undefeated team coming into Baltimore, and, you know, Pittsburgh undefeated and feeling good about themselves coming off the Tennessee win, but they hadn't had a break, and the Ravens should be the fresher team. And, you know, they have at least a little bit of a home field advantage with some fans, and they didn't get the job done. So it's definitely concerning, and it's one that I would imagine quite a few players and coaches, you know, for the Ravens are probably going to have some trouble sleeping over the next couple nights, knowing what kind of opportunity was there for them to get a win, and they just didn't get the job done because they made too many mistakes, and they were self-inflicted mistakes. You know, give Pittsburgh credit. I mean, they made the plays, but you can very much look at what Lamar Jackson did, some of the penalties. I mean, just a lot of stuff in that game that the Ravens did to themselves, more so than the Steelers playing all that great.
We have spent many nights together in Indianapolis, Indiana. I'm not sure I'm going to make the game this week. They've moved my flight around, but they haven't moved the game around. So I'm in investigative mode here, but Luke will be in Owings Mills all week, covering all things Ravens. I have to shout out all of our incredible sponsors. We are freshening up the sound here this week. You're going to hear the WNST Sports sweeps and liners sort of disappear for our Baltimore Positive work. If you've been out to the new website, you've seen Luke's sports page and all of our work out there, from all the political conversations, arts, music, JY from Styx, former Governor Martin O'Malley on. We've talked about all sorts of things going on around town right now, including Halloween with our friends at Ledoux Gardens. All of it brought to you by our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions. 1-800-CLEAN-WATER. I wear the hat. I wear the shirt. I'm very thankful that they fixed my water heater. They can fix any of your water services, residential, plumbing, boiler services, water analysis, water treatment, well water especially, acleanwater.com. My pal Matt Stover and I working with our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, 1-800-CLEAN-WATER. Royal Farms has the delicious waffle sandwiches and waffle bowls available this month. They are made with the artisan waffles. They're light and indulgent. Come in your choice of egg and cheese with either, now get this, sausage, scrapple, and when I tell Moeller they have scrapple, he's going to love that, bacon or chicken. So treat yourself to a waffle sandwich or a waffle bowl today. And remember, breakfast at Royal Farms, available anytime, day or night. We gassed up there over the weekend. I did not get chicken over the weekend. I did not. I just got gas. I'm not going to lie. Royal Farms, real fresh, real fast. And I'm going to turn my box around to feature the Western fries. I need to get some Western fries this month. It's important. Raskin Global, Leonard Raskin, empowering people to choose their financial future for over 33 years. Let them help you make your American dream a reality. Leonard will be here this week talking to me about his journey and the Ravens game on Sunday. You can find him at RaskinGlobal.com. And a major shout out to my pal Todd Shuler, who lost his dad this week, at Blondell Miller Schuler. You can find them at damngoodlawyer.com. No fees until they win. And I tell you this, he's going to be off the grid this week. I will get back up with him next week. But if you know Todd, give him some love. Give them a call down there, 410-687-7878. A lot of folks with tributes to Todd Shuler and his dad in Ocean City and a whole bunch of other things. I'm wearing my Full Circle shirt here on the interweb right now. You can find Dave up in Harford County on North Fountain Green Road, Bel Air. Get your car winterized. Get ready. I felt winter blowing in over the weekend. 410-676-CARS. That's 410-676-CARS. You can like them out on on Facebook as well, at Full Circle Tire and Auto. Luke, I'm going to get to the defense, and we'll get to the Steelers, and we'll get to Big Ben and all that. Anything else you want to throw on the Lamar thing? I mean, for me, I'll leave it at this, and this happens with every game for me, because I don't feel like they can win or lose the Super Bowl in October or November, so I'm a little older than that. But I do want to see him do this thing he hasn't done, which is lead the team from behind. And that only happens when he stinks enough early on to throw a couple of picks, to put 14 points up for the other guys, to put himself in a position to have to win. Had I opened up my mic in the post game, and he didn't appear to be really all that interested in answering questions after the game, and his mask was down, and I mean, his body language when they lose, whoo, completely different, you know, with the scales of human emotion, and that always weighs heavy for me, but that's part of being 22. But I would have asked him just about what that moment means when you've got the ball and you've got a couple of minutes, and he would say, well, I've done that before. Okay, you haven't done that here. You haven't done that around here. You haven't done that lately. You haven't done that without Ronnie Stanley. You haven't done that going up top in the air and, you know, piecing together four big plays or two plays in a chunk or with the legs or, you know, whatever he's going to do to make that miracle happen to win a game they shouldn't win in the end. Until he does that, I don't know, man. It's like, you know, it's like you're not really an NFL quarterback. You're like a virgin or something, you know. Like, you have to come from behind and win. That's part of the job description, man. It's the NFL.
Sure. And, I mean, I'll say more specifically. I mean, we've talked about Kansas City. He's 0-3 against Kansas City. That's been talked about at length. We don't need to belabor that point. We've talked about, you know, that scenario about being behind in the fourth quarter and being able to, you know, have a two-minute drive where you are trailing late. And, I mean, he had a chance. I mean, you kind of look at the very end there. They get the ball back and – what, he had to go 63 yards in 52 seconds. And look, that's not an easy position to be in when you're out of timeouts. But I think now
you want to make $30 million a year, you better figure out a way to do it.
Well, it's going to be way more than $30 million a year, but that's beside the point.
There you go.
Yeah. But now you add to the narrative, as I mentioned, and it was week five. It was his first start against the Steelers. It was at Heinz Field. And, you know, I mean, Pittsburgh was, you know, at that point, their season was all but over already after losing Roethlisberger. I mean, they had Mason Rudolph and then Duck Hodges trying to lead that offense. But he didn't play very well in that one. And now you see what happens in this one. I'll say this. The pressure in the spotlight is going to be on Lamar Jackson big time. And I'm not talking about just the stating the obvious about divisional implications when the Ravens go to Pittsburgh on Thanksgiving night. But now, if you don't want to – we've already talked about Kansas City. We've talked about some of the, you know, the fourth quarter and needing to come back from 10 down and do that and have confidence that they can do that in January. But now you add not playing well against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And to be very clear, Joe Flacco did not have very good results his first few years against the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's be very fair about that.
Yeah, that Palomalu pick, I still hear that one.
Until Lamar changes that part of the narrative, it's now something else that you look to and say, look, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from him. He was MVP of the league last year, and he still does all these special things that other quarterbacks in this league couldn't dream about doing. But when you're talking about it from a high leverage clutch standpoint, you know, you got to beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. And eventually you're going to have to beat the Kansas City Chiefs. And if you're down by 10 points with 14 minutes to go in January, got to orchestrate a comeback.
Well, dude, this month you better beat the Indianapolis Colts, the New England Patriots, and the Tennessee Titans, because you're going to have that. That's on the menu.
No question. And, I mean, as much as you can look at New England right now, I mean, let's face it, the Patriots are not the Patriots. I mean, they're just not. And maybe they will be that Sunday night game if it doesn't get flexed out. But that game certainly isn't looking as daunting as it would have looked prior to the last 4 or 5 weeks. But going to Indianapolis, I mean, that's not a slam dunk when you look at how the Colts defense is played. And, you know, not that I think the Ravens can't win, or not saying they won't win, but certainly they have to go out there and take much better care of the football at the very least, you know, at New England. And then, I mean, the Titans, now you look at the Titans the last couple weeks and say, okay, maybe they're not right there with Kansas City and Pittsburgh at this point, but still one of the more formidable teams in the league. So I said it at the beginning of the season, well, when I tried my best to kind of envision how the season would play out, and this is coming from someone who picked them to win the Super Bowl at the beginning of the season, I did look at November and say, you know, this could be the month that costs them the number one seed and could put them on the road in January and maybe go in the Arrowhead instead of having the Chiefs come to Baltimore. I mean, that was kind of what I was thinking about in early September. So, I mean, this is a tricky month. You know, December looks much more favorable. To be very clear, but you got to take care of business these next few weeks. So part of the challenge isn't just going to be that you're thinking about Pittsburgh and knowing Thanksgiving night and how critical that game is going to. I mean, it was already important, just that much more critical now, but you better take care of business these next few weeks, because you get in a position where you're three games back, you know, something like that. I mean, we're, even if you beat Pittsburgh, you're
still
behind
the eight ball. Three games back, you're not in it.
Well, I mean, really? Short of Pittsburgh having issues themselves or having some critical issues.
You're three
themselves.
Games back, they have a term for that. It's called wild card.
Most likely. So, I mean, it is imperative for them to move past this one. And, yes, they're going to have challenges on their offensive line. And I'm not sure, you know, Eric DaCosta pulls off a move at some point before, what, 4 p.m. Tuesday, I mean, okay. But they're not going to find Ronnie Stanley. Ronnie Stanley on a healthy leg is not walking through that door. Marshall Yanda with 65 pounds suddenly regained is not walking through that door. So they're going to have questions, and they're going to need some of their other guys to step up. And Greg Roman's probably going to need to be creative. And look, they ran the ball at will. That was really good to see. That was actually something very encouraging to see. I mean, we haven't even talked about it to this point. Mark Ingram didn't play. They didn't miss him one bit. And I'm not saying that as a slam on him as much as Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins especially did a terrific job. And I will give Greg Roman a lot of credit. They ran some of those option pitches in the second half. They had a lot of success doing that. So maybe they're going to have to lean on some of that stuff a little bit more. Maybe they're going to have to go back to a little bit more of what we saw last year and even 2018 over those final seven games. Might need to see a little bit more of that. But that brings us back to our original question, the prevailing question here. Is that formula going to cut it against the elite of the elite competition in January? And that's where you do look at it and say, Marquise Brown had two targets on Sunday. Mark Andrews had three catches for 32 yards.
Yeah, he had more tweets than he had targets.
Yeah. I mean, I love seeing Willie Snead have over 100 yards receiving, but if you're going to ask me if that's breakthrough or aberration at this point, I'm going to lean toward aberration. So they've got a lot of work to do. And the good news is, second half notwithstanding and some hiccups here and there, and you know, even go back to the second half of the Philadelphia game, I still very much believe in this defense to a very high degree, but I have concerns about this offense. And even with their ability to run the ball, and as good as that was to see that, when you lose Ronnie Stanley, when you're already talking about your offensive line and what the interior was looking like, you know, I mean, it's hard to get past that in terms of trying to handicap where the Ravens rank in the AFC. I mean, at this point, those questions about whether they're right behind Kansas City, that goes bye-bye for the foreseeable future. And now, I mean, you can talk all you want about having 457 yards compared to 221 and running the ball for 265 yards compared to 48. And Lamar finished with more passing yards than Roethlisberger, but you lost. And that the truth hurts there. You lost. And it was a game that you should have won, and you didn't because you couldn't take care of the football. And we've now seen it prior to the bye and now coming out of the bye, just self-inflicted mistakes. I mean, that's just going to kill you. And those are the things, to your point a few minutes ago, you just didn't see them do very often last year. And that's not to say that they can't get back to that, but when you lose what many people believe is the best left tackle in the NFL, it's going to make things that much more difficult for you.
Plenty of things to discuss here as the Ravens head to Indianapolis, where our football team once went back in 1984. Luke Jones will be in Owings Mills all week. We will be fully covered with all things election 2020 out at BaltimorePositive.com. You can find me, Ness, at BaltimorePositive.com. Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Snapchat, Instagram. Thanking all of our sponsors, our friends at Sporticulture. I'm wearing the hat. The Magma Lamp is on the set. Our friends at Taharka, and they are spinning up the new Apple Crisp thing that I'm going to be over-churning, and we're going to be making some deals to ship Taharka to you. This is the Caramel Crunch. It's in my belly right now, as well as some Honey Graham and some pumpkin pie cheesecake. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore sports and Baltimore positive.